Dr. Richard Lannan is our guest. We're talking about a general theory of love. You take me to poetry immediately. You take mm-hmm. me to novels. You take me to places that tell me stories. What does that have to do with doctors understanding the biological processes around love, for heaven's sake?
Well, we think love is really the glue that keeps people, our society, together. And it's all over the place. It's present all over. But people don't really pay attention to that too much. They don't really look at like the rules of love or connection.
When you talk about love having lawfulness, that it's mm-hmm. that's part of a biological process, that you can figure out things mm-hmm. about mm-hmm. something that I think most of it's saying is just, it's just, how can you put your hands around something like fuzzy love?
Yeah.
And you're saying that there is biology to this.
There's biology and there's rules and there's constraints. I mean, one of the things I think that our, you know, generation, our time now, we think in terms of anything being possible. We think, you know, like with technology or with science, that anything's possible. We tend to bring that down to the level of emotion and love, that anything is possible.
Well, we sure do.
And it's not true. Unless you have a love, unless you have attachment with a mother and a child, if you have no attachment, that child will probably die.
And you mean literally?
Literally die. Certain failure to thrive syndromes with children, you bring them into the hospital. If you don't touch them, if you don't hold them, they won't get better. If you hold them, they start to get better. This is independent of whether you're feeding them or not.
You mean independent of food?
Yeah. You can feed them, but their metabolism will not be the same as if you hold them and actually feed them. And actually, Dr. Amini did a study off that quite a few years ago. So you can't be alone. That's a law.
That's a tough thing for an American who thinks that independence is the most important thing in the world.
Isn't it something? It's like we got it backwards, you know?
Backwards. Well, tell me what backwards is and what's frontwards.
Frontwards is connection. Frontwards is a connection, social network, good relationships, paying attention to those, building them, achieving them. That's forward. Backwards is thinking you can do everything on your own. You don't need anybody. It's better to be that way. It's better to be independent. If you're having trouble, you should be alone. That's all wrong.
That's what you're
saying.
That's
all wrong. That's a pretty sweeping statement.
What you're saying is backwardness. I think we, our myth is that is the forward way. The genealogy you describe of the brain is from the reptilian brain, this little nub that sits on top of the spinal cord, to the mammalian brain, which is this limbic system that wraps around. And then this creation of the deities that is our
is the
brain that sits on top of all that, and that is the
thinks
place,
about things.
That's the place we think we're supposed to live. This the articulation at the Enlightenment coming forward is that is what being human is all about. And you're suggesting that leave some things out. In
was
fact,
the word wrong?
Well, yes. That's a strong suggestion. But
Well, that sense of like a neocortical centered, you know, that we make that our priority. That's like the evolution. That's what's best. Rather than seeing actually, you know, in some ways we're all three. And what we really want to do is give the limbic system its due. And really place it in terms of how important it is. Because if we're talking about our lives, we're talking about parenting, we're talking about being happy, all those things, we got to pay attention to the limbic system. We're not going to be able to think our way. It's really hard to think a piece of music. It's really hard to think a poem.
But the argument is that those poems and those musical creations are the output of rational people who have studied music, who have studied poetry, who
learned how to do it right.
Learned how to do, have had teachers pass along intellect to intellect, neocortex to neocortex, the tools and skills necessary to make this come to pass.
The doctor is shaking his head.
Side to side. Right. You know, that's the illusion. But actually, all of those are arts. You know, learning music, learning, they're all arts. And how are arts taught? They're actually taught by the memory system that we mentioned in the book called the implicit memory system, which is not the memory system that we think of as, you know, I'm aware of this fact or this fact or this fact. It's the memory system that, like, how we learn language, how we learn to ride a bike, how we learn the rules of emotion, the rules of emotion in our family, and how we learn music and how we learn poetry. And that's what's passed on. So when someone's teaching someone, in fact, the cognitive part gets in the way. If you start to think about it, you have trouble doing it.
If you start to think about riding the bike, you'll fall off.
You'll fall off.
That's really true, isn't it?
Well, and you said that the language, that this is how we learn language.
Right.
But it also, and this is, there were several, many, many ahas in your
book. You've written a revolutionary work here, all three of you together.
Thank you. The
notion that not only is language learned unconsciously or preconsciously or limbically or resonantly or this whole implicit notion, but that more to the point, that is the way we use it. That
yes.
That if we have to think about the words as they come out of our mouth, they do not...
doesn't sound like language.
Lost. it is flowing. I mean, what the thing... And language is the quintessence.
Yeah.
I think for most people, if we think about it, it is language that is the quintessence of this rational faculty and of our ability to be social creatures. And you're saying that that's not happening up here, it's happening back there.
Right.
Back there being the limbic system, the emotion system. Center.
Yeah. It's what generates the... if we have a ton of ideas and we, you know, we're thinking like we're letting our mind wander and we have a ton of ideas, what do we do? What makes us do one of those ideas? How we do that is going to be from our limbic system. It's
yes.
going to be our what we like, what our emotions are telling us, how we're feeling. It's going to give us the motivation to make sense out of all those ideas and to actually lead us in a direction in our life. We're not going to think what we're... I mean,
we're sitting in a doctor's office, and there's the illusion that I'm going to come in here to a doctor's office, and you're going to tell me what to think about stuff, and then I'm going to fix everything in my life. And yeah. you're saying, in a much grander scale, that that thinking part will give you some data.
Yeah.
But how you put the data together doesn't stay there.
What makes you move or you do something is not the data. In other words, if you try to talk yourself out of a feeling, I mean, you come in, you know, I'm angry. I'm going to talk myself out of angry. Or, you know, I'm so sad that this relationship broke up, and I'm going to talk myself out of that. It doesn't work. You just can't talk your way out of a feeling.
And yet you make a living with people talking to you.
But that's not talking in the same way. That's having an emotional exchange with the patient, and that's how the change actually occurs. There's an attunement between a patient and a therapist, and that process of attunement is what the change. That's what causes the change in therapy. If someone comes in and says, "How do I do this?" I could tell them. I mean, I could describe to them, you know, like the structure of why they're depressed or why they feel ashamed or, but that won't help them. We know it because we do it all the time. We could tell people that doesn't do it. If someone's very ashamed, they have to be with a person who can actually help them learn how to manage shame and bring them to a place where they don't feel shame the same way. in a way like a mother does to with her child. If the child, you know, spills something and suddenly feels very ashamed, what's the mother do? The mother goes, you know, talks to the child.
Tell him, don't feel ashamed. Maybe isn't it?
It's not that. You know, they go down. They, you know, it's okay. They give him a hug. Help him. We'll clean it up. Things will be better. But they actually teach their child how to deal with the emotion of shame. Therapy is like that.
Good therapy.
Good therapy is like that.
And that's an important distinction,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yes.
Because you can't just put your quarter in the slot and expect that therapy's going to fix you.
Right. Right.
On two levels, maybe because one has to participate and one has to have a trustworthy therapist.
Right. Both.
And of course, then the next question is, so how do I find a trustworthy therapist?
That's with some difficulty. With some, you ask people. You ask people how they feel about people. You know, like you want a therapist that will actually work with the patient. You know, like if someone asked me, well, who would be a good therapist for this particular person? I don't think, well, it's the brightest person. I think, well, who would really tune in to this person? Who would really understand on an emotional level what's going on with this person?
On an emotional level.
Yeah. Will they click? Will they actually?
Wasn't this like finding a mate? I mean, the things that you describe. Finding somebody or a friend or,
well, yeah, but in with a mate and a friend, it's a mutual interaction. With the therapist, it's there for the best interest of the patient, and that's a difference.
The element of trust in that. Just mm-hmm. I know, Bill. I know you want to speak. Finding a trustworthy relationship, mm-hmm. isn't that part of this formula that you're...
Yes. In order for therapy to work, there has to be some hope for trust. And as you work with someone, trust will develop as you get to know the person more. And in a sense, if you don't have trust and you don't have hope, therapy will never work.
What you're describing, and you collectively managed to write an entire book, I think, without using the word, sounds like empathy.
And if you would think about that, we'll be... Finish the question, then we're going to go away, and you can think, and we'll come back in just a minute.
And it is almost striking that the word empathy doesn't, I think, show up in the entire text. I did not set my computer to search it. but that it's interesting because it's to a layperson, that what you're describing sounds a great deal like empathy.
Yeah.
Think about that. We'll be back in just a minute with the Paula Gordon Show. We are going long because we're having such a good time with Dr. Richard Lannan here in San Francisco. Bill Russell and I would welcome you being with us when we return.